For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up newsletter. And thanks to all the people who've supported us, including by clicking on the thanks button in YouTube. And also greetings to viewers in Belgium who've made it number 17 in our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. But I'm not going to try and thank them in the local language, lest it provoke a spat. So instead, I'll praise Belgian chocolate and then move right along to praising an actual energy transition. Specifically that the International Energy Agency, which lately seems to have become the International Anti-Energy Agency, has had the good grace to admit that zealotry had overwhelmed its judgment. Well, they didn't put it that way, but Scientific American, which seems lately to have become Political American, concedes that, quote, the International Energy Agency predicts global demand for oil and gas will rise well beyond 2030, marking a sharp departure from the agency's previous forecasts that demand for oil would peak by 2030, end quote. And here we were right in the middle of a glittering green energy transition. So, what happened? We made it all up. No, wait, it was a combination of stubborn reality and flaccid political will, evidently. Quote, in a new report, the IEA says low gas prices, growing concerns over energy security, and a global lack of ambitious climate policies will delay the peak of the fossil fuel era until at least 2050, end quote. At least, you say. And yes, people have been predicting peak oil since at least 1919, so we suppose they might as well go on saying it, and they'll eventually be right. Unlike those who keep predicting the end of Arctic ice and moving the target, who never will be. But when it comes to oil, yeah, sooner or later, some new technology really will replace it. Not because a bunch of zealots chanted windmill, 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 but because buyers really wanted the new thing at the market price. Thus, when Sabine Hossenfelder commented, quote, breaking, peak oil has been postponed again, end quote, engineering professor Henry Schreimer added, quote, and demand will continue to increase until either substitution costs vanish or the oil does, end quote. Yep, there's the rub, or part of it. The other part is that the IEA, whose brand is very heavily built around boring, stolid, technocratic credibility, have been captured from within by wild-eyed activists who are making it look stupid. Especially as the retreat from climate extremism proceeds, it leaves the extremists exposed in foolish poses. Indeed, the doomsters who painted the map red and then it was reflected onto their faces are not only trying to downplay climate alarmism, they now want us to think that they never believed that stuff for a second. For instance, Zeke Housefather. He was, until recently, a reliable media go-to for doom and gloom climate quotations, who posted stuff like, quote, this month was, in my professional opinion as a climate scientist, absolutely gobsmackingly bananas, end quote, and wrote stuff like, quote, the further we push the climate beyond where it has been for the past few million years, the greater and more unpredictable the risks become, end quote. But now he sneers at such flim-flam. Quote, outside a fringe community of climate doomers, there are a few who think that climate change could realistically threaten the extinction of the human race, though some folks need to be a bit cautious about throwing around the term existential threat willy-nilly, end quote. Yeah, fringe doomers like US President Joe Biden or Canada's Supreme Court or all the world leaders who fawned over Greta Thunberg, pre-Hamas edition. Not to mention all the scientists who nodded approvingly along the way rather than calling any of them out. It was no fringe, and even if they're finally realizing how crazy they sounded and are embarrassed about it, they don't get to pretend they never said it. Including Teo Wacke, a.k.a. the end of winter as we know it. So they kept saying. Yet on November 10th, 2025, quote, yesterday was Ottawa's deepest November 10th since snow records began in 1955, end quote. Right after, we are anecdotally informed, a teacher told her high school class that it was proof of global warming that it used to snow in the city in November, and now, a headline, quote, polar vortex could make a white but frigid Christmas in Canada this year, report. A high-pressure system in the Arctic could push frigid air south starting in mid-December, raising hopes for a white Christmas and concerns of a deep freeze, end quote. And speaking of side effects, which is a habit that's an important part of the growing trend to climate sanity, a sardonic outfit called Doomberg reports on the insolvency of a massive British energy firm that took down one of only five remaining oil refineries in the entire UK, and which involved, if it was not entirely caused by, apparent massive embezzlement. Duenberg says, quote, an underappreciated consequence of regulatory hostility toward the oil and gas sector is that it often triggers a decay in the ownership quality of critical energy infrastructure, end quote. Exactly. Reputable majors are fleeing Britain, leaving it not just colder and poorer, but also more brittle. As much that is left in this field that the government is trying to crush has a dubious fly-by-night quality. We were told that climate alarmist policies were win-win with better weather and a better economy. The alarmists scoffed at the very possibility of a downside. But now it seems that there's nothing else, including in some unexpected places like the quality of corporate ownership. Some people still haven't gotten the memo, though, including self-styled cutting-edge thinkers in Canada who are racing to catch up with a parade that's vanishing over the horizon in the other direction. Like those at the Globe and Mail, who just wrote, quote, for the health of Canadians, the healthcare sector must decarbonize now, end quote. Right, that's the priority. Millions of Canadians have no family doctor, and the populace faces some of the world's longest waiting lists for essential surgery, but what the country really needs is for our healthcare budget to be spent putting solar panels on hospital roofs. These are people who think they're the smart ones in the room and really believe such things, and they're going to wonder how they didn't see the collapse of the whole thing coming. Oh, and the newsletter, we did have to mention, even if we're bitter about not being there to smell the coffee and savor the absurdity, COP30. So, when Reuters Sustainable Switch emailed that, quote, protesters forced their way into COP30, end quote, our response was, hey, at least someone showed up to this suddenly not cool event. Otherwise, it's been a dismal gathering, only rendered worse by various unconvincing efforts at cheerleading by activists and the press gathered in the Brazilian jungle. Previous COPs were filled with energy, if not sound judgment. Now, they're a backwater in a backwater where even the outrage is stale. And another thing. The Financial Times, which is not an outlet one would have considered a vanguard of the working class, runs a headline, quote, far-right and centre-right unite in EU Parliament to undermine green rules, end quote, and immediately explains that, quote, legislation marks definitive proof that cordon sanitaire to prevent far-right forces from shaping policy no longer works, end quote. Boo, far-right. There's no such thing, of course, as far left, and there's no headline, left-wing parties so stubborn about failed climate policies that politics shifts dramatically. Heck no, just boo Trump and so on. Not for them such bitter doses of reality as, quote, Sweden's pension funds face eye-watering losses after investing heavily in net zero projects, end quote. It's not the populace turning against failed policies, it's just a temporary failure of political will and decorum. And another thing, or two actually, because we now turn to our Have It Both Ways series. Perhaps you tend to picture the UK as perennially damp, like the classic Goon Show scene where Henry Crun says the rain is so lovely and warm on a summer evening that he's going to take one of his sou'westers off. But actually, dear old Blighty is no stranger to drought. In fact, an extended dry spell is currently underway, prompting some to cast their minds back to the great drought of 1976. And needless to say, global warming is the culprit. Even the Red Cross says so. And it's precisely what climate science predicted. In a 2010 study in the Journal of Hydrology, a team of scientists from the UK Met Office ran their models, and sure enough, quote, all drought indices show an overall increase in drought in the future. However, the spread of values is considerable, ranging from little change or a slight decrease to a significant increase, depending on ensemble member and, to a smaller extent, location, end quote. So, notwithstanding a bit of uncertainty, the matter is settled. The UK will be getting either a little or a lot drier. Unless, that is, it gets wetter, which might well happen because with climate change you get to have it both ways. Thus, the 2010 study came 3 years after a 2007 study, also by UK scientists, which also involved running climate models to see how temperature and precipitation would change in the UK over the 21st century. That study predicted a slight decrease in rainfall over the summer months, but the rest of the year was projected to get wetter, and in the winter, much wetter. So, overall, there will be more rainfall in the UK, assuming there isn't less. But whether the UK gets wetter or drier in the future, or some parts go one way and some parts the other, you can rest assured that climate science predicted it, and you're to blame. In the newsletter, we then presented an update on climate fingerprinting, one of those techniques used by global warming inquisitors to convict mankind. Because a new paper in Climate Dynamics by University of Guelph professor Ross McKittrick, called Consistent Climate Fingerprinting, is a follow-up to a paper of his that we reported on back in 2021. In the earlier paper, he exposed a mathematical error in the IPCC's optimal fingerprinting methodology that he said caused it to yield biased and unreliable results. And since that method has been used by the IPCC for 25 years to tie climate change to greenhouse gases and underpins their longstanding claims that carbon dioxide is responsible for virtually all the warming since the start of the 20th century, if the math is wrong, they also need to redo the analysis, right? Well, they didn't think so. They showed no sign of doing it, despite McKittrick's critique and his effort to engage with them. So, after years of waiting, he kindly did it for them. In the new paper, he presents a way to do the fingerprinting analysis that, unlike the IPCC method, satisfies all the requirements of mainstream statistical theory, which is his particular academic specialty. And this method confirms what other researchers have been arguing. The models warm way too much in response to greenhouse gases, and they don't put nearly enough weight on natural variability. Gad, it was a frame-up. Who knew? Then in the newsletter, we gave the last word to Myrtle Spurge. And who could resist? She sounds like a sitcom character, maybe a frumpy aunt with a loud voice and a crabby disposition who regularly shows up in old Carol Burnett show sketches. But actually, courtesy of the CO2science.org archive, she's Euphorbia lathris L, a small flowering plant prized as drought-tolerant foliage in gardens, but, as is so often the case, also condemned as an invasive weed elsewhere. But whoever this woman of comically named mystery may be, in 2004, two experiments showed that an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air boosted her growth by an average of 36.5%. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I'll believe peak oil when I see it. That's right.